So our next speaker is Colin Dean. He's going to talk about Make Python DevEx towards the red-green refactor of one in with an old tool. To be honest, I have no clue what he's going to talk about, so give him a warm welcome.
Not muted?
Yeah.
Ah.
Can you repeat, please? No, sorry. Yeah.
Maybe I'll just hit tunes with a little bit of Pittsburghese, and then you'll know what's going on there. All right. So, again, my name is Colin Dean. In case you missed that, that's very important. I focus a lot on developer experience. I believe that good tools and good practices enable building good software. I'm a huge fan of addressing problems through this problem diagnosis and remedy approach, consistent with medical and other scientific approaches to problem solving. If you search for Colin Dean problem diagnosis remedy on the internet, you will probably find things that I've written about using this for general proposals as well as architecture decision records. At a high level, I'll be talking about some of the pains that I experienced and observed over the last approximately 4 years as an experienced developer working in Python for the first time since 2005. And I'll show you how I solved those barriers to productivity using a very old tool. It's 48 years old this year, Make. I will say that this solution is in active development. It is in active maintenance. It is evolving over time. There's some pain points here and there, but by and large, it works. Some things may have changed since I created these slides. Originally, this presentation is from 2022, and I've updated it approximately yearly, including last week. This talk inspired the longest blog post ever on our corporate blog. When I turned it in, it was originally 30 pages. And we whittled it down to about 14 by the time we published it. Most blog posts hadn't been more than about 3 or 4 pages at the time. It also earned a coveted open source release at my company, the 8th largest retailer in the US. So I, of course, have to thank my employer for allowing me to open source stuff. And I wish that more employers would allow their people to open source even examples of this thing that they're doing inside. It's a great portfolio work type thing. Let's talk about some problems. Working with my teams of engineers and data scientists, we encountered these problems. So, what Python version should we use for development? What should be used in production? How do I install Python at a very specific point version? How do I ensure that my project works on a diverse development and production installation base? And of course, how do I install dependencies? You know, some things that to many of us in this room, these are kind of easy to answer. But to many other people, these are really hard questions to answer. If you're getting that same feeling that all of this could be easily written down and automated, you're kind of normal. But this is some of the questions that I had in my first week of working in Python in about 15 years of not working in Python. A lot of this presentation boils down to this question.
Python 2.
My diagnosis of this situation. My team uses macOS for development and deploys to Linux. Apple tends to keep its Python 3x installation within Python end-of-life dates, but it's always a little out of date, you know, a few point releases behind. Apple removed the system Python in macOS 12.3, as they warned in the 10.15 release notes. If anybody reads Apple's release notes, it's still included in Xcode, though. So that's how whenever you run Python and you're getting like user bin Python on macOS, it's coming through Xcode. Apple says don't rely on this, and they could remove it at any time from Xcode because it's a dependency internal to Xcode. This policy is similar to Homebrew's policy on Python, which is like, yeah, you can use brewed Python, but really, the brewed Python is there for us that use apps that use Python as a runtime environment. But Homebrew's Python won't disappear in a release. There are a ton of different ways to install and use Python. My team is consistently bringing their own Python, setting up however they wanted to, or whatever they knew best. This was proving to be unreliable and frustrating because people's environments were different, their paths were different. They weren't consistently installing new dependencies whenever they did a git pull, you know, some basic things that we might consider to be a little bit basic. So I had to think about which Python I wanted to use. You know, using the one provided by macOS was unreliable because it'll change and probably go away. Using Homebrew Python was hitting a moving target, especially at the time. You could just brew install Python 3, and you couldn't install specific minor versions. Now you can. Using PyEnv is about the same as choosing Anaconda, but Anaconda, of course, gives you some access to other dependencies as well. But Anaconda is not free. Conda itself is open source and free. Using its repositories configured by default is not free. Using Miniconda is not free. And our company found that out the hard way. There are still people who are using Mac ports. And yesterday I gave a talk in the Nix track. So hello to the Nix users out there. It's OK if you don't know what any of this is, because the developer experience in the end should abstract away most of these details. You shouldn't have to worry about it. And it should be done on a per repository basis so that if there are minute differences between a cornucopia of different repositories, you don't have to think about it. You can just run one command and it all just works. We just didn't have a clear single source of truth for what version of Python we wanted to use, where we wanted to get it from. While many of our projects are tied to a particular version because of a hard requirement on our cluster, a Python 3.7.1 installation from 2018, we still had this unexercised freedom to choose the Python we wanted to use in other contexts, including containers and similar. Since I originally created this system in this talk, we have moved to containerized deployments, so we can do anything we want inside the containers within limits. So it's very lovely no longer to have to run Python 3.7.1 in 2025. Pip is a venerable tool and under the hood. Even Poetry used Pip in the past, doesn't anymore. And of course, PIP was built outside of the time of Pi Project, although that's changing soon. Pi Project takes some getting used to. I think we're a little bit more used to it now in 2025 than we were in 2022. But even newer tools like Hatch, PDM, UV, all have different ways of installing dependencies, of showing dependencies, showing a dependency tree, of packaging, building, publishing. All these steps are ultimately automatable. If a repo isn't using Poetry, is using something else, or needs to use pip in some kind of intermediary step, then it's best to script these actions instead of leaving them inside of a README, which so many teams do. Pythonistas have a tendency to expect things to just work, you know, not have to think about compilation, not have to think about building packages, really. Originally, I talked here about compiling because the systems that we were using were too new for the packages. But over time, I'm starting to see in the last about 6 months or so the exact opposite problem, where legacy code bases that are using then current versions of things are having to recompile again because those dependencies are no longer running on the newer triplets. You know, we've got a newer operating system, a newer Python version. We now have to go back to compiling because the wheels aren't available for those particular versions. So there was a time when I was giving this talk when it was switching between like, oh, you don't really have to compile anything anymore. But just over the last 6 months, I'm starting to see things compile more often. As a safeguard, we have to plan for this. We have to plan for the possibility that we might have to compile dependencies again in the future sometime. This is all scriptable, but you know, any sufficiently advanced collection of scripts just re-implements a directic, a DAG build tool, directed acyclic graph. So why don't we just use one from the start? The remedy. We need a task runner for onboarding resync, something that is going to be easily executable and not just better documentation, because people don't read documentation. So let's install it from something else. We're not bound to an off-spender's whim. We're all using the same versions, the same tooling, with the possibility for as similar of an experience as we can get to build a common vocabulary, common procedures for developing and debugging our code. Of course, as I explained, there's a ton of different ways to use and install Python, a ton of different package managers, and now, of course, with UV installing its own Python. Most of the time, we were choosing either Homebrew or Conda on our team. So I have to return to this question again, which Python? And the clear way forward is to explicitly say which and provide a completely mindless way to install it. I think almost all of us have seen this famous comic from 2018 from XKCD. Fun fact, people used to think in college when XKCD first came out, used to think that it was me. Because this is my style of drawing. I had to deny that. Randall Monroe's too good. I chose PyEnv at the time in 2022, and I'd probably make the same decision now still. Mostly because it seemed to be the lowest barrier to entry. The most scripting friendly is written in Bash, so I knew it very well. We could choose the exact version of Python we wanted down to the minor version and avoid changing it from underneath the developer whenever there were point releases, as Homebrew would do sometimes at the time. I allowed for the user to continue to use Conda or Homebrew, managed Pythons, just in case what I was doing was going to mess up their productivity. It was incredibly important for developer experience for me to not mess up their workflow, even though I was trying to push a new workflow upon them. Homebrew is a base requirement for all of our projects, all of our setups. I'm a little biased because I'm a Homebrew maintainer and on its project leadership committee. Wasn't at the time, but I'm a little biased. advancements in build tools feature to install Python automatically, like UV does now. And that may significantly alter this pattern in the future. And I might talk about that a little more later if I have time. Settled on poetry, as most new projects in 21 and 22 were doing. It just made sense. That or pipenv. Still a great choice in 2025, though UV has kind of got its rocket boots on towards the goal line. Skip that. There's a ton of ways to install poetry too. So if we've got this problem of which Python and how do I get Python, and now we've got this problem of which poetry and how do I get poetry. The poetry maintainers strongly encourage using their installer or pipx. Their installer is mostly just a wrapper around pipx. While poetry can be installed through Homebrew or via pip, Upstream doesn't really want you to do this. They would prefer that you're using their particular installation methods. And that's what I've always tried to do. If you don't follow that, you can break your poetry installation, and I have done that plenty of times. While running poetry, it'll create its own virtual environment and then create a virtual environment for the code base. So if you're just installing poetry for the first time, it creates its own virtual environment and then creates one for each project that you have. And of course, the user can instruct poetry exactly which Python executable to use. Newer versions of poetry will figure out, based on PyEnv or some other things, which version of Python is installed that meets your requirements specified in the poetry configuration. I rejected a few commonly suggested solutions out of productivity concerns, the big one being containers. Containers are just too slow for what we do on our Macs. We're running Kolima containers on Linux on Mac, basically running it inside of a VM. It's just too slow to do real-world data science work, especially when we've got these like $4,000 Macs. It seems kind of silly. I needed some glue to get all this automated from some common tooling. So of course, the greatest common denominator is make. I've long used a minimal make setup in every ecosystem that I've touched: Scala, Rust, shell scripts, of course, Java back in the day, to provide a common onboarding experience. I've wrapped it around Maven, Gradle, SBT, Rake, a whole bunch of them. Make is very widely available. It's built into Mac OS, comes with Xcode. It's never going to go away. At least enough of a Make installation, there's always going to be some difference between GNU Make and BSD Make. Most of the time, we can build a Make file, configuration for Make, and we can easily share it across Python projects. You might get into some copy-paste, but ultimately it is very portable. Going to fly through a introduction to Make. Very simple Make file. When you run Make task, it'll run command that does something. It'll run every time that you invoke it. Sometimes you'll see dot phony above this to say this task doesn't actually produce anything. Another basic use case for Make is to produce files. Make was originally intended to compile C, and still, of course, widely used for that purpose. It also makes it really easy to add into Python projects where you have some non-Python transformations need to happen, whether it's like templating Markdown or something like that. A full Make tutorial is certainly out of scope for this presentation. Longer versions of this presentation, I might delve into it a little more, but not right now. It's 45 years old, well, 48 years old this year, so you can find lots of stuff out there on it. One such being this URL there where I've built a workshop that goes pretty heavily into Make. Make file tutorial is another great one, not mine. So why not something else? I've used most of these and almost always end up coming back to Make to wrap behaviors about these that I can't remember. principal engineer at Heroku many years ago said that every makefile in the company, every repo in the company needed to have a makefile that had at least those six tasks: make, deps, check, test, build, help, clean. Deps installed dependencies, check ran lints, test ran test, build ran, built a package. You can figure out what the other two mean. Wanted to clarify a reason why I'm so adamant about developer experience and this particular way of realizing it. It's important to have easy on-ramps to code bases, because it may not be somebody who's new to your team. It may be you who's lost a computer and is coming back to work that you started yesterday. It may be you 6 months or a year from now. Recently, I picked up a code base that I hadn't that I started and hadn't touched in 4 years, and I couldn't remember a thing about it. But I ran make deps, make the rest of the command, everything just worked. I'm pretty limited on time, so I'm going to skip through this a little bit. We have lots of good online help built into our make files, such that we have a description of each main task and what the task is. Lots of things for installing dependencies. We wanted to install things from Homebrew. Peru is a great ecosystem independent package manager. I use it extensively for my slides, and so on and so forth. Easily run tests, build a package, and publish to our internal PyPI system. And then, of course, we have plenty of code quality checks, the gamut. Nowadays, we mostly just run rough, but back when we created this, we had a lot more tools. There's some challenges in this in my last 2 minutes here. As the fourth generation of Macs roll out, fourth generation of ARM Macs roll out to developers, we're still having to support Intel machines sometimes. We're having to compile far less often, but we still have to compile sometimes. And I have, as I said earlier, I think we're going to probably maybe compile more in the future, because we're probably not going to update our dependencies quite so much, because that takes person time to do that. This is an example of what we had to do in order to enable compilation inside the makefile. Again, if I had a little more time, I would go over this in greater detail. But ultimately boils down to either running with a whole bunch of flags or just poetry. So when we would run this on Mac OS ARM 64, you'd see this actually running. And when it was run on Linux or Intel Mac, it'd just be poetry. Hopefully this was enough to wet your whistle and make you interested in providing a really easy way to get your projects, both open source and inside your companies, with a good developer on-ramp, something that anybody can approach, and it just works on their machine. Some improvements. Most of the teams that I was working on have disbanded, where I was originally working on this, but we've all been these seeds in a flower, and we've now spread ourselves all over the field. It's been interesting to see how this changes over time. That's it. If you're interested in learning more, please talk to me. And I'd love to hear, I've shared the original version of this setup, and you can also see my slides here. Check the matrix room, and I've left the link in there as well.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Very much for the nice talk. If you have any questions, then please either go directly and then ask questions or write in the chat. So.